I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Last week, the Philadelphia City Planning Commission approved an ambitious master plan for the development of the city's Delaware River waterfront over the next few decades. It's been a long time coming and has involved many public meetings, planning sessions, and debates about the future of the eastern part of the city. The civic vision for the central Delaware calls for a mix of projects along the river. While the plan was passed unanimously by the commission, it has its critics, most notably some private property owners and developers. Well, joining us to talk about the past, present, and future of Philadelphia's waterfront development are Alan Greenberger and Matt Rubin. Alan Greenberger is Philadelphia's Deputy Mayor for Economic Development and Director of Commerce. He's also the chairman of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission, and if that weren't enough, he's a board member of the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation, Four Hats. Alan Greenberger, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be here, Marty. Thanks.
You're welcome. And also with us is Matt Rubin. He's the president of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association, also chairman of the Central Delaware Advocacy Group, also known as CDAG, and that's a volunteer-based nonprofit organization composed of a coalition of civic and nonprofit organizations. And Matt Rubin, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here, Marty. Thanks.
You're welcome. And Alan, let me begin with you and talking about this unanimous approval last week. Is this a breakthrough or just the next step in a many next in a many-step process?
To be fair, I probably should say it's both. It's certainly the next step, and I think in our world, there are so many steps to get to the realization of either parts or wholes of master plans that you tend to be consumed by the steps, and I see this very much as you do one thing, you do the next thing, you do the next thing. But I think at a larger level, sort of taking myself out of that environment, I think this is a breakthrough, because this plan didn't just happen yesterday. This plan goes back years to the work that Penn Praxis did with many of these community groups and landowners. Even though there are some objections, there was a lot of connections. And this was really built up out of a set of common values, executed as a more detailed master plan, and then approved.
Matt, did you engage in the process, and do you, in a sense, sign off on the process that Alan just described?
Yeah, well, the Central Delaware Advocacy Group, or CDAG as we call it, has been sort of the citizen steward of the principles behind this plan from years before there was even a plan, and we certainly strongly advocated for this plan. So we're really supportive of it, and it's terrific to be able, from a community perspective, mm-hmm. to be able to come out and advocate for something, because people always say Philadelphia communities are always afraid of change, and it's great to be promoting change and to get that message out there and to get the reality out there. This started back in the fall of 06 when then-Mayor Street issued an executive order inaugurating this process with the Planning Commission, with Penn Praxis, which is UPenn's design outfit, and with, at the time, a 45-member community advisory group that included the current members of CDAG, but mm-hmm. also reps from Chambers of Commerce, the Building Industry Association. This had broad public buy-in in all sectors of Philadelphia society right from the beginning. So we're thrilled about this, and there's been a tremendous process. You could not ask for more public input, in my view, over the long haul of the last 5 to 6 years.
Alan, I was reading about this master plan, and it includes a trail along the waterfront, parks, low-rise buildings, better access to the area. Help our listeners understand, if this all comes to be, and this is a long-term process,
sure.
What will it look like along the Delaware?
Well, the premise, we have to start with this. The premise of the master plan is that investment by the public sector in public space, both the connections to the waterfront, trails along the waterfront, parks along the waterfront, these are the things that give definition to a waterfront that has been lacking definition, and they set up the real possibility of more enhanced private development in between all that public space. That was really the premise. It's different than what has happened over the previous, let's say, 30 years, where planning for the waterfront always involved a big push from the private sector that ultimately never came.
But looking at the what is it, about a 5 mile stretch along the Delaware?
Yeah, it's about 5-6 miles.
Most of that is owned by private individuals.
The vast majority of it is private individuals, although in the central part there are some significant public holdings. So obviously there's a combination of what can you do on public land, which you already control, and then there's the whole dilemma of how do you encourage private development per the master plan on the parts you don't hold. And those tend to be on the extremities north and south.
Do you have a priority? I mean, as you look at this master plan and you look at what this 5 mile stretch looks like, what's your top priority? What's the top priority, if not the Nutter administration, the Planning Commission, or even the Waterfront Development Corporation?
It's a combination of what you want to do and being smartly opportunistic. Now, the opportunity here is that the public sector owns the Festival Pier site at the foot of Spring Garden Street, and so we've always thought that that's the right place to have a significant private development on public land, and that's a way of sort of demonstrating the power of this plan and what the waterfront can be. But in the meantime, you have to sort of take on the bits that you can take, and the Ray Street Pier is the best example of that, funded by a combination of foundation funding, public funding, and a lot of willpower to get a public pier renovated as a public part, an example of what happens when you turn an obsolete pier, in this case, into a real vibrant public space.
Yeah. And if people have not been there, I suggest they go there because it's a pretty special place. Go ahead,
Yeah,
Matt.
It's a fantastic site. It was the 4th of July was just magical there, and they're just to go down on any seasonable evening or during the day is just quite an amazing experience, and you sometimes don't feel like you're in Philadelphia. It's really great. And what's also terrific about something like the Ray Street Pier is it exemplifies what this plan is supposed to do, which is the government has to lay down the basic rules of the road. Without some kind of enforcement of contract and basic land use controls, we would not recognize our modern world that we live in. And this is really saying that the land use controls we have for the waterfront are sorely outdated and we need to update them. And if you want to summarize what the master plan is supposed to bring into reality, it's we're supposed to reconnect our city to the river. There's supposed to be ways to get to the water that we currently don't have. And when you get there, there's supposed to be something to do there. There's supposed to be a reason to get there, and it's supposed to leverage other kinds of development. And the Ray Street Pier is a great example. As Alan said, you had some private funding and other funding. You build this wonderful destination, and now they're building the Ray Street Connector, which is enhancing the ability of bikers and pedestrians, and to some degrees automobiles, just to get down there and to have it not be as intimidating to go under the highway to get there. And the Fringe Festival and Live Arts Festival is now moving in across the street to a new headquarters. It's going to be incredible. So this one thing that on first glance is a kind of green park recreational area, which is great in and of itself, is also motivated a connection and is also starting to already spur private development of various kinds. And that's the goal of this plan.
Let me quote something that Neil Sklarov said. It was in the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's an attorney for an owner of one of the largest undeveloped tracts on the waterfront, said that, and I'm quoting here, that while much of the plan was wonderful, it nevertheless would have a devastating effect on his client, a man named James Anderson, and he's a Bucks County construction company owner. And obviously representing some concerns, apparently he owns something like 57 acres of waterfront land. Well, is there a way to build, to bring a developer like that in on this plan?
I think so. I certainly don't see it the same way the quote sees it. I don't think that it's going to have a devastating effect at all. The plan is a policy statement about what can happen. Everybody, and we've said this to that group repeatedly, everybody recognizes that there are portions of the waterfront that are long-term changes, particularly in the north, where you have a lot of still industrially zoned land that does not yet have either an active or a very compelling land use. Those are going to be long-term propositions. There's a lot of circumstances, not just the fact that they're privately owned, but they live in a way behind the highway, fairly disconnected from the neighborhoods on the other side of the highway. That's different than other parts of the plan. So it's a long-term proposition. We see this as a long-term discussion. The truth is they don't have a plan either for that property. So it's not like we're arguing about conflicting visions. We're arguing about a vision for what it could be against sort of all open opportunities here.
But is it a carrot and or stick approach to try to get developers, reluctant developers, to sign in on this, sign off on this plan?
Yeah, I suppose it is, but I think it's mostly these days carrot. There aren't that many sticks to wield. Zoning is certainly one of them. Policy is another one. But in the end, private property is private property, and you can't compel through zoning, for example, you can't make private property owners provide public space. You can incentivize it. You can negotiate. You can. There's a lot of things you can do in a discussion. And in the end, there may be legitimate uses up on the North End, for example, that simply are in conflict with public access. An industrial use that has land-to-water usage, like a port, is going to be in conflict. And if that's a legitimate and legal use up there, that's just simply going to win out. That's just a matter of common sense.
And not to get too legalistic here, but does the city also have eminent domain in its back pocket as a, you know, essentially a card that could be played?
We do, particularly for public land use. However, eminent domain is not something you go to automatically. That's a very difficult process to run. It's very expensive. It's very time-consuming. It's subject to all sorts of court battles. So you don't do this lightly.
I think that,
go ahead, Matt.
I think this area is the one where there might be the most lack of clarity and all kinds of misleading information floating around out there. From what I understand, you know, there are lots of property owners who bought property in the 80s and 90s, speculating on the possibility of at first riverboat gambling and then later on casinos. And that's a huge part of why the waterfront lies fallow today in many areas. There are many other causes as well, but that's a big one. And, you know, they always say there are no atheists in foxholes. Well, there's no true libertarians in development either. And I think there's this idea out there among some property owners, and, you know, just standing outside and not having any inside information, my perception just as a layperson is that Mr. Anderson seems to feel like he doesn't want, you know, quote-unquote government interfering with his property, and that's going to make it hard to develop. First off, it's hard to make that argument when the property is laying there underutilized for years and years and years, and all of a sudden a new plan is going to somehow make it difficult to do something that you already aren't doing. And in addition to that, you know, this is a property that my understanding is that has a KOZ on it, a Keystone Opportunity Zone, which is a government, you know, provided incentive on it. It was rezoned at his request, at least part of it, from industrial to commercial. So he certainly, you know, has not hesitated to avail himself of the services of government in the past. And what this plan is saying is that there's a broad public interest here. And, you know, the plan is making its best effort to do what William Penn discovered over 300 years ago, which is if you create more street frontage on a property, you know, you increase the value and you increase its ability to be developed. And when we talk about developers, we have to distinguish between longtime landowners. A lot of the so-called development community on the waterfront are people we don't know yet. They're people who are going to come in and buy these parcels and maybe be from Philly or maybe not be from Philly and actually build on them. So, you know, a landowner who's trying to sell and a developer who's trying to build are not quite the same person.
Would you agree with that, Alan?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair statement. Some parcels are very unpredictable because people are waiting to see the forces that might influence ultimate development. And the truth is that most developers, and I don't say this meanly, but most developers are followers. Your development is a very big risk. So a developer who leads, who is the first one, is rare to find. Most developers want to see how the trend lines are going. And the Ray Street Pier actually is a very good example. The public investment there, as Matt was saying, has, I think, really induced things to happen around it, including things that the public sector owns. The Waterfront Corporation owns Pier 9, for instance, just south of the Ray Street Pier. That building needs attention, and that's what we're doing right now because of our own efforts to improve the area.
Well, let me just quickly reintroduce you, and we'll take a short break, get back to our conversation. The voice you just heard is Alan Greenberger, Deputy Mayor of Philadelphia. He's also Chairman of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission. We are talking about a master plan that was voted unanimously last week. Also with us is Matt Rubin, Chairman of CDAG. That's a Central Delaware Advocacy Group. We'll be right back.
Folkways at Gwynedd supports WHYY. Guided by time-honored Quaker values, Folkways is a continuing care retirement community for adults 65 and over. Since 1967, Folkways has been providing its residents with a comprehensive health program and financial stability. Folkways is committed to friendship, caring, and respect as a way of life. For more information or a personal tour, the number is 215-283-7010.
This is Ira Glass of This American Life, and I'm excited to announce that I'm coming to Princeton, New Jersey to give a talk about how we put together our radio show each week. I'll be playing clips and favorite stories, and I can basically mix the show on stage live as you watch. And unlike some other public radio hosts, I do not sing. It'll be Sunday, April 29th, 3 in the afternoon at the MacArthur Theater in Princeton. Proceeds benefit WHYY. For more information, visit whyy.org/member experience.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Colorectal cancer is the second deadliest cancer in the U.S. It is also one of the most preventable. For most people, successful prevention begins at age 50 with a skilled colonoscopy for the detection and removal of any precancerous polyps. Accuracy is crucial. The gastroenterology team at Fox Chase brings experience and expertise to this important screening regimen. More at foxchase.org. Fox Chase Cancer Center. Hearts plus minds.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Well, Philadelphia is one step closer to instituting a master plan for the 5 to 6 miles along the Delaware River from Oregon Avenue in the south to Allegheny in the north. Last week, the Philadelphia City Planning Commission voted unanimously to approve a plan that includes a trail along the waterfront, parks, low-rise buildings, and better access to the area. We're talking with Alan Greenberger. He's Philadelphia's deputy mayor for economic development and Director of Commerce. He's the chairman of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission, and he's also a board member of the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation. Matt Rubin is with us as well. He's the president of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association and chairman of CDAG. That's the Central Delaware Advocacy Group. And we're taking calls. Any questions or comments that you might have about this master plan or maybe even a vision you have yourself, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Alan, both you and Matt were talking about development and real estate ownership. If a lot of this land is in private hands and people see opportunities along the Delaware, will they in any way be inhibited from buying properties or developing properties in light of this master plan?
No, we don't think so. In fact, I think it'll be just the opposite. I think there'll be some incentive to get in on the action and to develop something. Developers, by and large, like some sense of direction about where things are going. It helps ensure public approvals. It helps not just at the regulatory level, but I think the general public. And ultimately, it helps ensure that their projects are a success, which is why people develop in the first place. So I think a plan is can be a very effective tool, and we're seeing the beginnings of that now on things like the area around Ray Street. It wasn't just the Fringe Festival and our own Pier 9 building, which we need to help, but we're seeing heightened activity from private landowners who are immediately around the Ray Street area talking about projects. They probably all won't happen, but some will, and the plan is what creates that interest.
If I want to build a box store or put in a casino, can I do that?
Neither one of those can be done very easily. There are certainly places where they can be done. Those are very different circumstances, I might add, as well. Obviously, one ties to lots of state regulation, and the other ties to more localized regulation. But, you know, we're trying to separate them out a minute.
I hear you.
Big box, we're trying to limit the kind of damage that we think was done to the waterfront a long time ago when people weren't focused on what the waterfront could be. Casinos are a whole other story.
Yes, indeed. I just thought I would raise that because there is the possibility of another casino, although that's pretty much on the back burner. Matt, let me go back to you. When I was reading about some of the CDAG initial concerns or perhaps even ongoing concerns, one is about billboards, one is about access, parking, the ability to review some of these development projects. Has CDAG essentially signed off on this or sees itself as a partner in this master plan?
Yeah, I think CDAG's a civic advocate, and as a civic advocate, you're always in a dual role. Yes, you're a partner insofar as it's something you support, and when the Planning Commission was considering adopting this plan, and we're thrilled that they did, we were strongly and wildly in favor of that, of course. But as an advocate, you're also constantly pushing what you feel are in the best interests of the constituent organizations and, most importantly, the people who you represent. And basically, anyone who's ever walked to Delaware Avenue and said, this is ugly, and why can't they do anything here, and how come there's all these fences up by the water, and this could be so great, and how come it isn't? That's pretty much what CDAG is. It's a bunch of people who feel the same way. And so we're constantly saying, this is great. Make sure that there's really access. This is great. Make sure that the public spaces approximately every half mile up and down the water that are called for in the plan really get done and that the conditions are created where that can really happen. You know, this is great, but we need to keep an eye on this. And, you know, my personal fear has always been what I call death by 1,000 permits, which is we just don't want whoever kind of pulling permits at key transitional moments in this process. And so we're always urging vigilance on the part of the city, and we're always publicly speaking out and saying, you know, now is not the time to relax. Now is the time to double down on our vigilance. So in that respect, we're constantly pushing.
And I was reading that the possibility of something like 300,000 people that would have, you know, would have, I guess, immediate access to the river. Does that square with your research?
East of Broad Street and generally in the center city area is the fastest growing part of Philadelphia. My neighborhood of Northern Liberties grew 60% from the 2000 census to the 2010 census, which is insane. And the next fastest growing part of the city is Center City East, Old City, Wash West, those areas. So the population of Philadelphia, as we heard in the recent redistricting debate about city council, is all moving east. So this waterfront really is home or near home for a huge number of Philadelphians. And it's also going to be the economic engine for a lot of Philadelphia moving forward. I mean, I can't think of another area that is this underdeveloped and this big and this ripe for the creation of new residences, new commercial establishments, and hopefully new job-creating developments.
Ellen, this is a question more about the past, but why has this taken so long? I think you visit other cities and you see waterfront development. You go to Baltimore, you see waterfront development. You go to New York, you see people riding and jogging and walking their dogs along the waterfront. What has prevented Philadelphia from making progress on this issue?
You're going to have to bring in a scholar of urban history for that. I would say two things. There's a whole assortment of reasons. I'm not even sure I could prioritize them. But I would say that some of the things that we see happening in other places, Baltimore Inner Harbor, some of the New York waterfront, Battery City Park, those things took 20 and 30 years to pull off. They got a better start. They had a more credible plan in the beginning, but they took decades to do. As any major project, you can go back in history to the Benjamin Franklin Parkway. Every big move that's happened, not just in this city, but in pretty much every city, takes almost a generation before it sort of hits a tipping point where its credibility is fully established and you don't have to push as hard.
Because there's so many stakeholders in a way?
Stakeholders, private property owners, market conditions. One of the things you have to say about Philadelphia is that because of the perfectly legitimate things, industrialization on the waterfront, which ultimately led at some level to the presence of these highways, which at the time they were built, maybe look crazy now, but at the time they were built looked like reasonable dividers between strongly residential neighborhoods and polluting industry, or not necessarily polluting, but industry. Right. That was considered to be a bad neighbor to residential. There was a certain sense of that at the time. There were other factors too, but what seemed reasonable at a moment in time is no longer reasonable. But that's now 50 years that Philadelphia neighborhoods have been cut off from the waterfront, and there's no civic muscle that believes in it. And so you have to bring it back. Well, if it took 50 years to happen, arguably took longer, it's going to take some period of time to get it back too. And you do that bit by bit.
And there was no political will for so. Yeah. I mean, this the. Certainly all credit to Mayor Street for the original executive order and particularly to former Councilman Frank DiCicco for really taking leadership on this. That said, before the Nutter administration, the Planning Commission was not empowered, in my view, to do what a Planning Commission is supposed to do. I mean, this is the most empowered Planning Commission since the times of Richardson Dilworth and Ed Bacon, and they're also doing a better job, I think, of getting public input than they did back then. But there was the Penn's Landing attempts to develop that during the Street administration were a fiasco, and a lot of the corruption stuff that came out was around Penn's Landing. So there just has not been a desire to actually look at the whole thing and to create the political will to plan it, and I think now there finally is. So I believe, yes, Philadelphia is undercapitalized compared to a lot of other big cities, but, look at Baltimore. Talk about undercapitalized. Mm-hmm. So I think this would have happened earlier, despite all the problems, if there had been more political will and, just a competent management of planning in the city earlier on.
And we are talking about the development along the Delaware River on the east portion of the city of Philadelphia, a master plan that was approved last week by the Philadelphia City Planning Commission. The voice you just heard is Matt Rubin, president of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association, also chairman of the Central Delaware Advocacy Group, Alan Greenberger, Philadelphia's deputy mayor for economic development, director of commerce, chairman of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission and a member of the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation. And again, interested in your comments, your questions, and what you want along the Delaware River, give us a call at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. I do want to explore this I-95 challenge, but let me first get Frank from Center City, Philadelphia to join us on Radio Times. And Frank, go ahead, you're on the air.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
I'm really enjoying the program, and
Thank you.
Think it's of vital interest for all the reasons already put forward. I would point out one thing to enhance the waterfront, to enhance the public use versus commercial, which has not been really in the best interest of the whole community going forward. And that is called what I would call the neutralization of 95.
Hmm.
Now, it's my understanding that federal funding is coming again as to how to upgrade 95. And in my opinion, unless they cover that thing in order to allow access on foot or even sometimes by car, it's going to make it very hard to make the waterfront attractive and to neutralize the impact of 95, and that's what I've got to say.
Well, Frank, thanks for the call to Radio Times, and that gives us a chance to really jump in on this, and I'll put this first to you, Alan.
Well, let's get to the comment that Frank made about the cover. There actually is a substantial piece of cover in place now where I-95 is depressed generally through the center of the city. It's not very successful cover, because in part because its connections are very weak. So just picture this: if you happen to be in front of the parking garage and the what at least used to be called the Ritz's Theater, maybe still is, and you walk onto that cover, you come to a dead end on the other side of the cover, and then you have to sort of circle back to Chestnut Street to get over. When you get over there, you're faced with these kind of highway-like ramps and bridges, which are very unfriendly pedestrian environments. So there's a certain amount, and the good news is there's a certain amount of infrastructure in place that's very underutilized, has not been thought through very carefully. The caller's right, however, there is more cover that probably, in the scale of big infrastructure, relatively small investment to enhance some cover over that, and that's what the plan shows at the Penn's Landing area, to make a really effective public space that starts at Front Street and goes all the way down to the river. It's not cheap, but like I said, in the scale of infrastructure costs, pretty right. Modest.
Well, and a dead end is not inviting to cross I-95.
Or even where it's not a dead end, right. In the cover that's known as Folletta Plaza, which is a perfectly nice cover. It actually gets you from Front Street to the Delaware Avenue, but there's nothing happening there.
Yeah,
I mean, there's some good memorials around it, but right. the thing itself, there's nothing happening.
There's
interesting.
Some
simple, go ahead,
some simple things, some different improved landscaping, combined with some increased coverage, so you have larger areas that are covered, could really make a huge difference. And that's going to make a great difference for the center part of the waterfront. I-95 along the waterfront, it's either depressed or it's depressing if you're not in an area where it's depressed. And we all use it. It's incredible. I mean, some of us couldn't imagine life without it. At the same time, a lot of us, especially who are not in the center, I think fantasize a lot about just blowing it up because it's so repulsive and so ugly and such a barrier. PennDOT is working on rebuilding 95, and there's good and bad. And some of that, they're going to improve some of the connections that currently exist that where you walk under the highway, and that's terrific. On the other hand, the actual decking of 95 is going to widen by 30 to 60 feet in a lot of areas, and that's going to just be even more of a barrier. So, I think the 30 to 50-year plan should be in some way to try to get rid of this thing or significantly
reroute it somehow?
Yeah, there's a local guy who's active in planning named Greg Heller who always points out, 95 in Philly is ultimately a spur. You can't get to D.C. from D.C. to New York that way. And, he wants to merge it with Delaware Avenue and make the whole thing a on-grade thing like the West Side Highway in New York. But it's not practical, I don't think. But maybe 30 years out, maybe it is. And it just can't be that way forever. It's too ugly and it's too much of a barrier.
Well, we could go on. Let me get, looks like Patrick from Kensington to join our conversation. And Patrick, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello.
Hi.
I'd like to. I haven't had a chance to actually read the plan that was approved, but I'm wondering what facilities are included to allow visiting vessels. In 1982, I witnessed when I was a kid, I saw the entire waterfront covered with sailing ships from all around the world, and it changed the course of my life. And it, I believe these new plans from earlier Penn Praxis plans that I'd seen don't include the arrangement of the waterfront to allow visiting vessels.
Well, Patrick, let's find out if that's true or not. And I'm looking at Alan Greenberger. Go ahead, Alan.
It may or may not be entirely to your expectations, but there are provisions in the plan for private boating. We think that the focus of that really is the basin around Penn's Landing. We really envision a complete redevelopment of it. And already, the Waterfront Corporation has been doing infrastructure work in that basin to create more opportunity for private boating. There's also a very big marina just north of the Ben Franklin Bridge that, again, I think needs some infrastructure help. The things that you don't see are the things that are dangerous. Those things silt up. They need to be redredged so that they can be effective places. We actually got a letter the other day about sort of smaller scale stuff, the kayaking, canoeing, probably sunfish kind of stuff, and obviously the balancing act there. We do show activity sort of between some of the piers, but you have to then be careful because the Delaware River is still a major shipping channel. Mm-hmm. There's an active port up at the Tioga Marine Terminal. We're the biggest importer of South American vegetables and fruit that are coming up to that marine terminal. There are big boats floating around, and we all know the problem that happened a year and a half ago. So there's a balance to be struck here.
And Patrick was talking about those tall ships, and it is a beautiful sight. Matt, do you want to weigh in on that at all?
Yeah, the Pennsylvania Environmental Council, which is one of SeaDag's member organizations, has been doing kayaking programming for a while on part of the waterfront, and mm-hmm. it's been incredibly successful. So I think, I don't know about visiting ships per se, but recreational use of that waterway is certainly something that's been growing organically, and as Alan said, I think is going to be accommodated perhaps in limited ways, but will be accommodated. And also in the South, there's the potential for tremendous growth of the port, and the waterway, you know, is going to be very important for port growth in the South, which is, of course, going to hopefully create all kinds of family-sustaining jobs that Philadelphia is desperately in need of.
Does SeaDag have a position on dredging one way or the other? There's talk about dredging the Delaware River.
SeaDag does not have a position on dredging. I'm personally quite thankful that SeaDag has never had to take a position one way or the other on dredging, although I'm sure someone will call in now. But SeaDag, in all seriousness, though, it's an important issue, and SeaDag is very much in favor and has been since the beginning of ensuring that this master plan, particularly the portions in the South, don't do anything that would impinge upon the potential growth of Southport. And I feel confident that the current plan as it's constructed doesn't impinge on that mm-hmm. and does allow the port to grow organically. And when you were talking before about big boxes and casinos, one of the most basic things this plan does is if someone comes in and wants to develop something, it says, look, you know, you can do a lot of what you want, but you can't, for example, cover 100% of your property with no access to the river and no open space for a giant residential project. And conversely, you can't kind of build houses in an industrial area where mm-hmm. the port needs to expand. So it just kind of says, hey, heads up, these basic kind of things aren't going to work.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about a master plan for the river, the Delaware River, the miles between Allegheny and Oregon, looking at a master plan for developing that part of Philadelphia. It's been an issue that has been under debate and discussion for some time now. And again, Matt Rubin, president of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association, Alan Greenberger, Philadelphia's deputy mayor for economic development and director of commerce. We're going to take a very short break, get back to our conversation and our callers, and we're interested in hearing from those of you living, especially in the eastern part of Philadelphia. What do you make of this master plan? What do you want along the Delaware? Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. Call us. We'll be right back.
Bristol Riverside Theater supports WHYY and presents Steel Magnolias March 20th through April 8th. Set entirely in the Louisiana beauty parlor of Truvy Jones, Steel Magnolias is a play about the bond among a group of Southern women. The BRT cast brings you the unforgettable story of six women who stand together laughing in order to survive the tears. Steel Magnolias, March 20th through April 8th at Bristol Riverside Theater. For tickets, brtstage.org or 215-785-0100.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. March Madness has come to an unlikely place. Have it. Also, the legacy of the great Graham Parsons, the late musician's daughter, Polly, is starting a foundation to help musicians fight drug abuse. That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Drexel supports WHYY. If you are at least 20 pounds overweight, you may be eligible to participate in a research study called the ENACT Project at Drexel University. This year-long weight loss study is funded by the National Institutes of Health and is designed to help adult men and women lose weight and keep it off without medication. Guidance from weight loss specialists at group meetings is included. For more information, 215-762-8400. 215-762-8400.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. We are talking about a master plan that was voted on unanimously or approved unanimously last week by the Philadelphia City Planning Commission, improving a trail along the Delaware River waterfront, parks along the waterfront, low-rise buildings, better access to the area. And this is a plan and an issue that's been debated and discussed for many years now. It's about 5 or 6 miles along the Delaware River from Argan Avenue in the south to Allegheny Avenue in the north. We're talking about what's in this plan, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. And again, Matt Rubin and Alan Greenberg are our guests. We had a caller, unfortunately, couldn't stay on, Alan, but had a question or perhaps even was questioning how many jobs, and of course this is a city desperate for jobs, how many jobs out of a plan like this?
Well,
any way to know?
I think, yeah, and I think the caller also had made a comment about parks don't create jobs, but neither does no development. And the point here is to induce development, and we think that the creation of public space is the way you do that. Now, that could result in a couple of things. It could result in private development that has commercial and or industrial activity, and those are job creators, obviously, or it could result, result in more people living there who would live there by choice. And it's absolutely been established by people like Richard Florida and many others that the attraction of talent to a city is a powerful economic development inducement, because businesses look for talent. This has been repeated by businesses again and again. So you want to do both. Mm-hmm. You want to create the opportunity for businesses. You also want to attract more people to be living in the city of Philadelphia, which in itself is a business attractor.
Matt, as a homeowner, are parks and trails, is that an attractive thing to have in a neighborhood?
Yeah, definitely. And I would actually say parks do create jobs. Because parks certainly attract residents, but speaking from my own experience in my community has a park right in the middle of it. It's a 2-acre park. And not only has housing been created around these parks, but parks bring people who come to live in the community and who start businesses in the community. Right. It's very much happened in Northern Liberties. It's happened in Fishtown. It's happened all up and down the River Ward communities, and I'm sure it's happened in communities all across Philadelphia. So because they draw people who start businesses, because they increase what in the tech world is called mindshare and get the Philadelphia waterfront on a national stage and on people's minds all throughout the region, it helps stimulate things economically. But I think there's also something underneath these kind of comments saying, oh, parks don't create jobs. And this is really about class.
And it's how so?
Because most of the new housing stock built in Philadelphia is, you know, I couldn't afford it, and a lot of people can't afford it. And the idea is, oh, there's an idea floating out around there. Oh, well, you know, fancy people and planners and eggheads, they plan parks, but they don't care about the jobs for real Philadelphians. And there's this idea that if you make a park, you're somehow taking away land that would otherwise be used to create jobs. And that's just – that either or is not really the case. But I do think that we need to be very attentive to the fact that Philadelphia is, for big American cities, has some of the highest poverty rates.
25%.
Yeah, it has some of the lowest percentage of residents who have college educations. And there's a tremendous need – nationwide, but especially in Philadelphia, for whatever new kind of industrial jobs can be generated in the American economy. Now, there's a huge need for that. And I would say that one of the reasons I support this master plan is because at the absolute worst, this plan does no harm to the prospects for new industrial development. And I would say it would actually probably improve the prospects compared to the mess we have now.
Go ahead, Alan. You want to add something?
Well, the other thing to point out is the other river. Places for industry and commercial.
That would be the Schuylkill.
Yes, the Schuylkill, the hidden river. places for commercial activity and industry don't necessarily work every single place there's land. There's a lot of land on the Delaware where it might work. There's also a lot where it won't work. However, over on the Lower Schuylkill, which I just want to get in a mention for, 3,000 acres of industrial land south of South Street all the way to the mouth of the Delaware River. We, in conjunction with Philadelphia Industrial Development Corporation, are currently doing a new plan for that, those 3,000 acres, believing that with the right infrastructure improvements, that land is very well suited, particularly to industrial development. But you have to create the parcels, you have to create the access, you have to create the infrastructure necessary to get there, and that's a great place to be doing it.
But, Alan, how does all this, and assuming it happens in some version that we've been talking about, and it, you know, sounds very exciting, how do you connect that to the rest of the city? And as Matt said, this is a city with a very high poverty rate. How do people living in North Philly, for instance, enjoy some of the fruits of what we've been talking about?
Well, people who live in certain parts of the city may have limited access simply because of where they live to some of the assets of the city. But when the assets are strong enough, Fairmount Park is a good example, mm-hmm. as it surrounds the Schuylkill north of the center, an awful lot of people come there from lots of places, and they come from all walks of life and from all levels of wealth to enjoy its assets. So you create strong assets, people get there. Mm-hmm. It is a very mobile society. However, it does bring up a separate point, which is that we constantly have to be also looking at public transit and the way people get around. And from my perspective, we have to particularly be looking at the connections between public transit and where the strong job nodes are. It's really important. You mentioned North Philly, West Philly. We have, for instance, a strong industrial job node up in far northeast. But if I lived further south in North Philadelphia, West Philadelphia, South Philadelphia, how I get there to those jobs is not great yet. It's difficult. That's something we really need to be paying attention to, because that access is what makes the entire region's accessibility work.
And in terms of enjoying the waterfront, I always have been amazed. And one of the things I've always loved about the waterfront is even just the Great Plaza, which is great, but kind of under, not what it could be. I've been going there for events just by myself, just to walk around, ever since I was in Philadelphia almost 20 years ago. And I've never ceased to amaze me the diversity of people from all walks of life, of all ages and single and families with kids, younger people, all colors, all creeds. Everyone goes there. People love it. And once Spring Garden, you know, finally gets turned into what it's supposed to be, you know, 9 acres of mixed-use development with a large public access component to it, you know, you'll be able to get from North Philadelphia anywhere near Broad Street or West Philly, anywhere near Market, go down the subway and get there in 25, 30 minutes for a couple of dollars and enjoy that. So I think people are already enjoying it, and if you just gave them more, everyone in the city would go to those new amenities as well.
But even just picking up on that, Alan, whether this ends, and this is not a crack on Rittenhouse Square, but obviously that's a lovely high-end part of Philadelphia, whether what we're talking about benefits people who are well off. If there's development, people are going to want to be there. You can build nice housing. You can get, you know, high-end, high-educated people living along the Delaware. But that does leave out a certain part of the population.
I would take issue with the description that it leaves out. The creation of public space is public space, and it means that you provide access to everybody in the city. You know, there's a lot of good public space in lots of places in the city that most people don't use because it's not convenient to where one lives. But it doesn't mean that it shouldn't be there, and it shouldn't be seen as simply a benefit to one segment or another of Philadelphians. This is about the citizens of Philadelphia and ultimately the visiting public as well that we want to attract. And I think you make those places attractive by making the best public access you can, and you provide programming to support it, which the Waterfront Corporation, as Matt was suggesting at the Great Plaza, does, and people do come.
And, you know, there's been a tremendous amount of scholarly work in recent years about how in the United States in general, spaces that people think of as public have increasingly, as you implied, Marty, become more and more about commerce. Like, if you don't have money to spend, there are fewer and fewer places you can go, and that's what's so great about building parks approximately every half mile along the waterfront. And if you just look at Penn Treaty Park in Fishtown and you look at the Ray Street Pier, these are radically different spaces. But it doesn't cost anything to get into either one of them, and you can do whatever you want and hang out and have a good time. So, you know, parks are incredibly democratic.
Well, let's get back to our callers at 1-888-477-9499, talking about a master plan for development along the city's Delaware River waterfront, the city, of course, being Philadelphia. 1-888-477-9499. We have, looks like, Reverend Jesse from North Philadelphia. And Reverend, go ahead, you're on Radio Times. Do we have Reverend Jesse? That would be number one. Okay, well, I'll paraphrase what I think he was saying, which is that the waterfront should be for all Philadelphians. And, Alan, it doesn't sound like you would have an argument with Reverend Jesse at all.
None at all. In fact, that's one of the reasons you create public space. Referring back to the question earlier about, you know, why do parks, this is a way to make sure that the waterfront is open to everybody in the city.
Well, let me get Reverend Jesse to speak for himself, and go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Yes, I think it is a powerful piece to have a waterfront development that is not just for the people who live there, but for everybody who is in Philadelphia. And I think you just said that, but I want to echo that because it becomes I'm someone who lives in North Philadelphia,
right.
And I am hoping and expecting and just can't wait for the waterfront to become a destination place for kids to come and play, for to have picnics, to host family reunions, to do things like that. And the second part of this is I also think it's a powerful piece for visitors and tourists to be able to come to some place like a waterfront development. I know in places like Chicago, where I have lived for a short period of time, and having much of the waterfront being public space there has been a powerful inducement for employers to promote coming to Chicago area. I think we can do that here in Philadelphia. I think we've got a powerful and a nice place to attract people.
Well, I appreciate the call, and our guest, Alan Greenberger, is nodding and has a smile on his face as you're talking.
Well, it's interesting that Philadelphia has 37 miles of waterfront. We grew out of a city that came from the river and the commerce that came from the river, and over time we've kind of lost that for most of that waterfront. This is very much about regaining it. 37 miles is more than most cities have.
Right.
That's a lot of waterfront. And, you know, I think there's a biological base to this where, I don't remember what the percentage is, but the majority of what we are physically is water. And I think there's a
we kind meaning of, us human beings.
Yeah, human beings. And there's a kind of, and Matt's sending me a note that says 60% because he knows he remembers his high school biology, I guess. I think we just enjoy being by the water. It's a powerful force, and you want to make sure that people can get there.
I'm looking at the screen here, but let me put this to you, Matt. Questions about billboards. Is that of concern to you, billboards along the Delaware?
Yeah, you know, the city is desperate for revenue, and so there's some sentiment in city council these days that advertising is a way to generate revenue. If you drive up or down I-95 or parts of the Schuylkill Expressway, sure, you're just inundated with billboards. And the new digital billboards are, to some eyes, less unattractive, to other eyes, more distracting, or maybe both. So I think there's a lot of sentiment amongst people who live along the waterfront that there's just too much visual pollution with billboards. I don't want to go out too far and say that it's unanimous or anything, but there's a lot of concern about that. And there's also, I think, a lot of just resentment because a lot of billboards and other public advertising that's gone up in Philadelphia has required zoning variances, in some cases just gone up without the proper permits and just been allowed to stay. And so I think there's just a lot of Philadelphia-style resentment that there's a perception that there's like powerful private interests who were just getting their way and running roughshod over communities. There's also some concern about when I-95 is widened, the billboards that are there will allow to be reinstalled, you know, farther to the east and west to accommodate the new highway, and how close are those going to be to people's houses. So I think there's a lot of concern about that, but it hasn't been sorted out yet in terms of what the new signage regulations are going to look like in the new zoning code and what's really going to happen with all those billboards.
It sounds like a show for us. Anything, a quick comment that you have, Alan, because I do want to get to Eric from South Philly to join us.
Get to Eric.
Let's see what Eric from South Philly has to say. And Eric, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. Quick question. It seems to me as a transplant to the area that Philadelphia has a problem with public space becoming covered with graffiti and becoming a hub for crime and drugs. And I'm wondering, I want to be excited about this project, but I worry that when we're talking about public space, it has that potential to become something else. I'm wondering what could be done to prevent that. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for calling in. Yeah, go ahead, Alan.
Well, first let me say that there's a huge amount of public space in Philadelphia that's in remarkably good condition, remarkably free of graffiti in all kinds of different neighborhoods. One of the reasons that when that happens, particularly when it's embedded in neighborhoods, is that community groups and individuals work with the city to take responsibility for the maintenance and the oversight of these parks. People who are behaving badly need to know that it's not just government who's paying attention, but it's neighbors who are paying attention. And if I can tout one of the programs this administration has been running called Philly Rising, which is a very coordinated attempt at finding out what in a specific area are the pressing community issues and concentrating on those so that things are not always one solution fitting all conditions. And we're finding success, the key one being increases in public safety, which has a direct, relationship to the kind of vandalism that sometimes happens.
Matt, we have a minute, and I'm going to see if you can do the zoning changes that are scheduled to take effect in August in 45 seconds. Can you do that?
Sure. August 22nd, new zoning code for Philadelphia goes into effect. It's anticipated at that time there will also be an overlay for the waterfront. So in August, there are a new set of rules for the waterfront that says no matter what zoning you have on a parcel, there are some basic things that can and can't happen. And then later on, the Planning Commission is going to go through and remap the waterfront and the rest of the city, saying, does the underlying zoning for each parcel on the waterfront really make sense for today's world, or do we need to change it?
Is he correct there, Alan?
Yeah, Matt's got it. We may have to start, paying him as a consultant or something. He knows the facts well.
Well, on that note, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times, getting us up to speed on this master plan. Alan Greenberger, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks, Marty.
You're welcome. And Matt Rubin, thank you very much as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. And Matt Rubin is president of the Northern Liberties Neighbors Association, also chairman of the Central Delaware Advocacy Group, also known as CDAG. And Alan Greenberger wears four hats in the city of Philadelphia, deputy mayor for economic development, director of commerce, chair of the Philadelphia City Planning Commission, and a member of the Delaware River Waterfront Corporation. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program, including Facebook, Twitter, email, and the archives. I'm Marty Moscone. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.